you know that Rod Stewart worked in a cemetery before he made it big? Tom Waits, a pizza shop. Art Garfunkel and Simon and from Simon and Garfunkel was working as a maths teacher. He does look a bit like a maths teacher. When Bridge Over Troubled Waters went to number one, it might not surprise you to hear that Ozzy Osbourne worked in an abattoir before his taste for bats made him a household name. It is true that many of our greatest artists have found odd jobs to make ends meet before getting their big break. But for the next generation of artists here in Australia, that break is getting further and further away. And it's harder and harder to make a living, with the new research out of Macquarie University finding fewer than 1 in 10 artists are making a full-time living from their talents. I'm curious to know from you how you made ends meet, before your career got started. Are you finding the need to pick up those side jobs again in this cost of living crisis? And do you think we support our cultural scene enough in this country? And what are we at risk of losing in the next generation who can't afford to make art? The text line's open for you now, 0418 226576. Rachel is stacking shelves at Woolies in the evenings to sort of get by. Ash says he's a musician, or she is a musician with a music degree, but also studying to be a high school teacher. It would be great to be a full-time musician, but you need to be reasonable and think long-term as well. If my music career takes off, then happy days, but I'll still have money in a good industry if I ever want to settle down a bit. Everyone has different goals, but you need to be a bit financially savvy whilst pursuing the dream, says Ash, very wisely, you might add as well. And this one too, my creative life always involved working to survive in other industries, and most of my peers in different creative industries identify with this statistic. This isn't new. Actors always worked on switchboards. Visual artists were administrators, waitresses or nurses or teachers. We've been subsidising the arts and culture industry for decades this way. What about you? What's your side hustle? How are you making ends meet? 0418 226 576. David Throsby is a cultural economist and a distinguished professor at Macquarie University. David, you've been tracking the working conditions of professional artists for, I think, four decades now. You've made a full-time career out of it, you might say. How have you seen things change for artists in Australia in that time? Because we've had the ebbs and flows of both major parties at the helm of arts policy in this country. How have things changed?
Well, it does go back a long way, and it's true that it is still hard for artists to make a living. The thing, I suppose, that you could say has changed quite a lot in the period since I started doing these surveys right back in the early 1980s is that there's been an increase in the number of freelance artists having to work as self-employed workers rather than with employment, with a sort of regular employment. Back in the day, you know, artists tended to have that sort of employment, even with things like theatre companies or symphony orchestras as musicians or as bands and whatever. Now, increasingly, the numbers of them are having to work as freelancers, and that just means that there's increased insecurity in the sort of life in which they lead. That's true across the board as a whole, in the sense that there's been casualisation of the workforce across the board. But I think artists have been more affected by this than most other workers, and so we've seen that change. We've also seen a relative decline in artist numbers. Artist numbers in Australia, and we're talking here about practicing professional artists. We're not talking about sort of hobbyists. We're talking about people who are, practicing professionals who are working at the standard that's expected of a professional actor or a visual artist or writer or whatever it is. Their numbers rose during the 1980s and 1990s, but then they stabilised, and there has been a decline, certainly relative to the growth in the workforce generally, although the total numbers have remained pretty much the same. The rest of the workforce has grown, so that proportionately artists are somewhat less. But one of the things that we do find I have found over all of these surveys is that incomes are relatively low. They've stayed more or less constant in real terms, but in comparison with the workforce at large, they're quite significantly less.
I'm going to ask you something controversial here. Maybe these artists and performers aren't that good. I mean, when you describe the difference between a professional and an amateur, that sounded quite subjective, because in this day and age of monetization on YouTube for all kinds of performance art, is the bar somehow higher to be able to live off the income that you derive from your artistic pursuit?
Oh, yeah, look, there is a, I mean, we do have screening questions for the survey so that we are confident that the people that we are surveying and that we include in this these studies are practicing professionals, that they that, and the screening questions find out whether or not they're working at a level which would be regarded as professional in their particular calling. So that, for example, you can't just be a novelist. You have to, if you want to be a novelist, you have to be able to participate to claim that you're a practicing professional. To have a novel actually published by a recognised publisher, or an actor has to have had a part. Or else have had training. I mean, so, you know, a lot of artists have had extensive training to become actors or craftspeople or whatever, dancers or whatever. And these things are also an indication of a level of achievement that would qualify them as professionals. So it isn't that there are a lot of crummy people around, you know, who are no good, who are managing to get themselves accepted as artists. It's really quite a tough profession to get into. And it's the same with medicine, or it's the same with lawyer. You know, with law, you just can't, you know, suddenly put up your shingle and say you're a lawyer. And you can't just simply say, I'm an artist. Well, you can, but it doesn't sort of get you into the ranks of being a professional. And so we do have these screening questions, which do screen out all the people who shouldn't be there.
For anyone dreaming of writing the great Australian novel, this might be a wake-up call. The average annual income from a practicing author in Australia is $18,200. I mean, this is very, very low and nowhere near enough to subsist a living on. What about other professions in the arts? What sort of salaries are we talking about here?
Pretty much the same across the board, Andy. There's it fluctuates up a bit, up and down in the period that we were looking at. Actors went up a bit, but others went down. Craftspeople went down. So the average is around for creative income. That is the income that they get from actually doing their creative work. The average was about $23,000, but they also take on other work such as teaching in the art form, and that adds about another 15,000. So the total arts-related work, or art, creative plus arts-related work, is about 40,000. And then they have to take work outside, and that adds about another 15,000 to their total income. So their total incomes are around the 55,000 mark, which again doesn't compare very well with the rest of the workforce. I mean, the average income across the whole of the workforce was about 78,000 in that year, and that's 20 or 30% higher than artists are able to get.
Last year, the Albanese government announced a $300 million national cultural policy. We're 18 months into that policy now. Has there been any impact?
Yeah, the impact is pretty slow to materialise, I think, and that's not to be critical of the policy. That's the way that these things tend to work. And there's still quite a lot of discussion going on. I mean, one of the things about that cultural policy, which was called Revive, because it was placed in the period just after the end, well, it isn't really the end of COVID, but certainly the return to normal to some extent of the arts and other parts of the economy. To the great credit of that policy, it does place the individual artist as central to the production of art in Australia. I mean, I think this is one of the things that is often overlooked, and that if you think of the creative industries, it's large. At the centre of the creative industries is the individual artist, the person who is creating the work, the ideas, the output, which is going to inform the rest of the, filter through to the rest of the economy, and which contributes economic output to the economy, and that's something which is celebrated, or not exactly celebrated, but is certainly referred to in the cultural policy, and that in due course I hope will lead to some more targeted support measures, because what government cultural policy does, it doesn't tell artists what they've got to do. It is intended to create the conditions under which artists can actually flourish, and we find that the major reason why creative artists aren't able to continue doing their creative work is an economic constraint. They just can't make enough money out of it. And so that's why, as your correspondent said, they have to take work outside. And we find that across the board, and that's always been the case.
A distinguished professor of economics at Macquarie University, David Throsby, always a pleasure. Thank you so much for your time.
Not at all, Andy. Nice to talk to you.
ABCRN helps you understand the world. Find more of our stories on the ABC Listen app.